Hey everybody, this is Jonathan Ogden, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for West Coast Bias, the show brought to you all the way from the best coast. It's the West Coast Bias, that is. Aw, yeah.
Otani! Welcome to another episode of West Coast Bias. I am your host, Jamal Artis, coming to you from the desert out here in Sahuarita, Arizona. West Coast Bias is a part of the What's Brewin' Network, a network of many great shows. You can listen to myself chime in on the What's Brewin' Symposium with Jake, Mike, and Bill. You can hear Jake and his daughter Megan on the Bare Minimum. That's about Megan's experiences at Cal, and Jake as a father being proud of raising a future Cal alum. I can relate in terms of being a Cal alum, not raising one. And of course, there's the occasional B team on the B sides or whatever they call it. They're on the X Twitter. Whatever Elon Musk wants to call it, where you can hear Michael Hanna hold court and talk about everything UCLA sports. Obviously this hasn't been a regular show for a while. I moved to Arizona, and so it's harder for Jake and I to get together to put together a podcast, but I figured this was a special occasion. You guys can get a solo show hear me and Jake maybe chime in a little bit on the What's Brewing Symposium, since it's football season is over. We're now into bowl season and the transfer portal time. Maybe he'll let me talk. Maybe we will talk a little bit about what's going on in the LA sports world. So the big story of the weekend was, of course, the Los Angeles Clippers. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's the Los Angeles Dodgers confirming that they are signing Shohei Ohtani, the number one free agent in this free agent class. Shohei Ohtani leaving the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim after 6 years there and confirming on his own that he was going to sign with the Los Angeles Dodgers after a lot of speculation, a lot of brouhaha about the process, and even some false reporting on where he was going to end up. And I'll go into the timeline. But for right now, it's just amazing. The Dodgers have pulled it off. I think this is something that's been in the works for a while. This is something that they've wanted. They tried to get Ohtani to come to Los Angeles when he first came over from Japan, but because there was no DH in the National League, it wasn't happening. So, you know, now they are confirmed in signing the number one free agent. The terms are 10 years, $700 million. That's right, you heard that, $700 million. But we'll get into how that actually works, the whole contract and everything. I kind of wanted to do a timeline, but just off a little research here, I think this is the first time that the MVP of a league has been signed as a free agent in the subsequent year, if that makes sense, since Barry Bonds in 1992, when he went from the Pittsburgh Pirates winning the MVP of the National League in 1992 and then going to the San Francisco Giants for the following year. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's pretty right. Obviously, the Dodgers have had players who were former MVPs go to the team and be on the team. There was at one point a couple years ago, well, obviously Mookie Betts, they traded for him, but he was not the reigning MVP. Who was it? That was the year of the MVPs. At 2021, they had Albert Pujols, Cody Bellinger, and Mookie Betts on the team. But obviously that was completely different circumstances. They got Pujols off the waiver wire. So I'm looking, just kind of cursory look. Yeah, it doesn't look like there has been an MVP to switch teams from 1 year to the next. Let's see. I'm still looking. Bear with me. No, I know this isn't the best podcast, but no. It doesn't look... Oh, no. I could be wrong. No, it looks like Giancarlo Stanton, actually. The 2017 National League MVP. He went to go... No, I don't think so. Nope. Nope, he was traded. So, the contract following. Yeah, he was traded after his MVP season, similar to Mookie Betts. But yeah, there really is no MVP who's been signed as a free agent. A lot of caveats there, but signed as a free agent the following year somewhere else since Barry Bonds back in 1993. So there we go. It's definitely the biggest signing in Dodger history. I think previous to that, I think as a free agent, they hadn't given somebody that much money since Kevin Brown to make them the highest paid player in the league. I think that was the richest contract they had signed before. I know people are going to say, well, what about Mookie? Well, Mookie they traded for and they just extended him. But even then, I don't think that made him the highest paid player. And certainly of this Andrew Friedman era, yes, he has not gone out and gotten big-time free agents like this. And someone's going to say Freddie Freeman. Well, Freddie Freeman was 2 years removed from his MVP season and was, I believe, already 30 years old when he signed. This is his last contract. This is what you would consider the Shohei Ohtani in his prime, his first big contract since he came over to the major leagues. Totally different circumstances, but still amazing, amazing process for the Dodgers to get the guy that they wanted. And it sort of validates what happened over the last couple of years since the Dodgers won the World Series in 2020 in that COVID year. I think this is, if you want an answer, is why didn't they re-sign Corey Seager? Why didn't they try to re-sign Trey Turner? Why did they defer those big contracts and wait for Ohtani? And I think that's why. I mean, that's kind of why they went dumpster diving last year and sort of stayed out of free agents process when all these shortstops like Trey Turner, Xander Bogaerts, gosh, who else? Oh, you know, the Verlander and Scherzer free agent packages. That I think this is why they did it, is because they wanted to get Shohei Ohtani. They wanted to make sure they had the money for Shohei Ohtani. They wanted to reset the luxury cap so that they'd have some spending room, not only for Shohei Ohtani, but for other free agents or possible trades that they can make in this offseason. I want to talk about the process, or the timeline, I guess, more of a timeline. So last week, at the beginning of the week, there was the whole Dave Roberts coming out and saying honestly that they had met with Ohtani, I believe, last Friday. And there was a lot of controversy about that. A lot of people were kind of like, what did you do? You know, like Tommy Boy, where it's like part of the reason was because Ohtani wanted to keep these negotiations private. He didn't want anything coming out in the public about what exactly was agreed to or their meetings. I don't know. Nobody really knows what it was that he didn't want coming out, but the speculation was that he wanted things private, didn't want anything leaking, didn't want anything leaking out to the media. And everybody jumped on Dave Roberts, basically saying he hurt the Dodgers process because of the privacy that Ohtani had been explicit about. Although it was kind of silly because everybody knew he had met with the Giants. Everybody knew that the Blue Jays were heavy into negotiations with him. These team names were coming out. I believe there's when the Yankees traded for Juan Soto, suck it Padres. It kind of was speculated that kind of took him out of the Ohtani sweepstakes. There was just a lot of media around his free agency that was already out there, that it seemed kind of silly that everybody was dumping on Dave Roberts, basically saying that they had met, that the team and Ohtani had met, which everybody had already been reporting and assuming anyway. So that's what started the week off. And then Friday, JP Hoonstra, who's formerly of the Southern California Media Group, which is like the Pasadena newspaper, was it the LA Daily News? What's the one in Anaheim? I forget. The Orange County Register. It's a group of papers, basically. He had been the beat writer for the Dodgers for many, many years. He had actually written a book that I have, chronicling 50 greatest games in Dodger history. And he reported for Dodger Nation, which is an independent blog/social media/YouTube and podcast group, similar to what's Bruin Network, obviously from a Dodgers perspective solely. He reported that it was a done deal. He was going to Toronto, and I think it was John Morosi, an MLB beat writer, covers Major League Baseball, I think for MLB.com or maybe Sports Illustrated. He was also saying that he had heard similar things. He had heard the same thing, that it was a done deal. He was going to Toronto. There was a private plane that was tracked going from Orange County to Toronto's international airport, and everybody speculated that that was Ohtani was on it, and that there was going to be a press conference that evening around 6 p.m. Toronto time. And so that was it for the Dodgers. They had missed out. All the planning, everything had missed out. The only problem with that timeline was that by the time it was 3 in the afternoon Pacific time, no press conference had been made. Almost an hour after those initial tweets had gone out saying that Ohtani was going to go to Toronto, I think there was a couple of local guys who covered the Blue Jays were saying they hadn't heard anything. As far as they knew, there was nothing to the reporting that, yes, Toronto had met with Ohtani, that, yes, there was some sort of negotiation, but nothing had been finalized. And then, for those baseball Twitter folks, Bob Nightingale, our hero, was kind of like the bugaboo, the guy who the cooler of any sort of story. If he says, you know, if the Dodgers have a 20-game win streak, he says, and the next day he chimes in that the Dodgers could get to 21. Everybody just assumes it's over, that the win streak is over. If, I don't know, if there's a no-hitter going on and he reports it, then everybody just assumes that the no-hitter is done. You know, so he's kind of like the cooler of Major League Baseball. He said that Ohtani was not on a plane to Canada, that his sources are telling him he was still in Southern California, and everybody's, you know, the light bulb popped up over everybody's head, and that made it seem like the Toronto thing wasn't a real deal. And then it was sort of reported that way, that the Toronto thing was never, something that was going to be announced, that whatever was leaked was false information. And so we went on, and it felt like, oh boy, please just make your decision. We don't care if it's Toronto. We don't care if it's the Dodgers. We don't care if you're going back to Japan. Just make a decision. Because essentially, it pretty much any team in negotiations with Ohtani or considered part of the sweepstakes, they're putting their whole offseason on hold until they can figure out whether he signed with them or not. So obviously with the Dodgers, it's a big thing. You know, they're coming off a 100-win season, but another terrible October where they got swept by the lowly Diamondbacks, who went on to go to the World Series. But still, you know, low expectation for the team. A lot of big changes. So everything riding on Ohtani, or at least moving on from Ohtani and getting things together and having your plan B and all that stuff. So Saturday morning, no Ohtani news. No Ohtani news, and then boom, Shohei Ohtani went on his own Instagram, and using what I assume was Google Images, pulled up the plainest LA Dodgers logo he could find, and basically said he was signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And then the news came out confirming what he had said, and that it was $700 million for 10 years. The biggest deal in baseball history, obviously the biggest deal in Dodgers history, their biggest free agent signing. Like I said, since they made Kevin Brown the number one paid player in baseball back in, I think it was 1999. And probably the biggest free agent acquisition of everyday player since Daryl Strawberry back in 1990. Big news for the team. And then just about half an hour ago, it was made official that the Dodgers had signed him. They put out a couple of tweets, one with like sort of I guess what would be their press release, and then another this anime edited looking video, showing Ohtani as an anime character and making it official. And then the Angels tweeted out their thank you for 6 seasons. So it's official. Ohtani has signed with the Dodgers. Oh, happy day. Oh, happy day. It's just a big deal for the Dodgers as an organization, and certainly puts a big bullseye on them. But for right now, Dodger fans can rejoice that he is going to be part of their team. Let's not forget that Shohei Ohtani, as of 2 weeks ago or maybe a month ago, is reigning American League MVP. He won't be playing in the American League anymore, but nonetheless. And it's also his second MVP since he's gotten to Major League Baseball. Let me just run off a few things from his resume as a Major League Baseball player. AL Rookie of the Year, a 3-time All-Star, 2-time MVP now, 2-time MLB First Team. Somehow he's MLB second team twice, too, in the same year. I don't know how that makes sense. A 2-time Silver Slugger Award winner. 3-time Edgar Martinez Award winner. That goes to the best DH in baseball. He led the American League home runs last year. He led the American Leagues in triples in 2021. Right before the season started, he led Japan to the World Baseball Classic Championship, was the MVP of the tournament, and was part of the All-World Baseball Classic team. Essentially, the Dodgers are getting the best player in baseball. He's able to pitch. He's able to hit. He's one of the fastest players in baseball. It's quite amazing that they're adding this guy to a 100-win team. He's somebody who can do two things for the game. Now, he did have Tommy John surgery. It's the second one, so he's not going to pitch. But regardless, the fact that he's not pitching next year, we'll see if he's able to pitch when he comes back and as a pitcher in 2025. But for all things considered, it looks like he will be playing in the lineup next year, because Tommy John surgery doesn't affect the DH. He can still swing even after a few months. We don't know when he'll start, but he can still swing even after a few months after surgery. It's just amazing. He hit the longest home run last year, 493-foot home run, longest home run of the season. It's just crazy. There's so many accolades that this player has, and the fact that he's going to the Dodgers is just crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. He was 5th in runs created in the league. That he was number 1 in WAR, OPS, OPS plus, all these categories that that just show you what a talent he is at the plate. And he's going to be in a lineup for sure that we know of, with Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith. Those are your top 4 players right now, hitters in the lineup. It's just the Dodgers are going to have this guy for the next 10 years. It's pretty amazing. And then before the official announcement was made, there was all these stories coming out, or at least reported, about how much of the money is going to be deferred. So you think, well, 10 years, $700 million. Well, that's $70 million a year. But the truth of the matter is he's going to defer for the first 10 years of his contract $68 million a year. So what ends up happening is his contract is closer to what looks like about a $43 million a year because of the interest on this deferred, I believe at 5% deferred contract. So the contract's worth is more like $430 because of the conclusion of the deal to be paid out from 2034 to 2043 is this banked money, basically, that's going to be paid out. So the Dodgers won't be on the hook. So at $43 million, really is what he's getting paid a year due to the deferment of everything. Once you consider the interest on the contract, that means that the Dodgers will have space to make more moves. They need starting pitching. Right now, Clayton Kershaw is not signed. He's had shoulder surgery. It's not known whether he'll pitch again next year. He said he's hoping to get back sometime in the summer, even if he does pitch. Walker Buehler It was reported about a week ago, isn't going to be ready for the beginning of the season like they thought they were, coming off the second Tommy John surgery. You know, you got rookies like Bobby Miller and Emmett Sheehan in the starting lineup, as starting pitchers that came on last year and helped the team, but were not the best, and certainly don't have as much experience being starters. You need a frontline starters, and this is a frontline starter market right now. You guys got like Blake Snell, who just won the Cy Young for the San Diego Padres. You got Yamamoto, a player from Japan, 25-year-old pitcher from Japan, who's commanding a lot of attention. There's a possible trade for Tyler Glass now, a pitcher for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that Andrew Friedman knows very well. There are just guys out there. There's Dylan Cease of the Chicago White Sox. There's moves to be made, surely, for the Dodgers still. And the fact that this money is going to be deferred gives them a lot more flexibility than if they were really paying out $70 million a year the luxury tax situation in baseball. That, the fact that he was willing to do this for any team, and the fact that he's willing to do this for the Dodgers, is just great, because the Dodgers have a lot of resources. They have a lot of depth in their minor league system where they can put together a trade package. They have the money. They have flexibility because of this deferment, these deferments of his salary, that it's, they're just in a good position to keep doing more than just putting all their eggs in one basket with Shohei Ohtani. So great move for the Dodgers. Like I said, Dodger fans should be happy. I mean, it almost guarantees, somebody I heard on the radio was asking what kind of their window they have. And if you think about it, it's a window where they can have Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Freddie Freeman. That's at least through Freddie Freeman's contract. That's 4 more years. Mookie Betts is signed for, I believe, another, let's see, he signed in 2000, so it's 2001, 2, 3, 4, 6 years of Mookie, and 10 years of Ohtani. It's just pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome what kind of window. And, you know, if any of those guys gets hurt or has to walk away from the game, you know they'll have the resources. You know they'll have the resources to go find another player, another frontline guy. That's the thing. That this flexibility allows them. This allows them the chance to continue to be successful in building the team, remaining contenders for a very long, long time. Other stuff that came out about this whole Ohtani thing. Ohtani wears number 17. He's going to continue to wear it because the current Dodger who's wearing it is Joe Kelly, who signed his contract 1 year, I think, $8 million to stay with the team in the bullpen. He deferred to the team in a hilarious sort of campaign. His wife said that her husband was willing to walk away from being number 17 on the team so that Ohtani could have it. And then she posted a funny tweet, was it real, on Instagram, showing what she was doing with all of Kelly's old number 17 jerseys, as he's now chosen number 99. So it's pretty funny. You should look up the reel on Instagram. In terms of what other people are saying about this, a lot of people were mad that the Dodgers could even do this, pay that much money for one player, and then they were even more mad tonight as the new story came about these deferrals. And by the way, the Dodgers aren't the only team to use this kind of deferral system. The most famous example is Bobby Bonilla, who's been paid, I think, $1 million a year since 1992 until 2022, maybe. No, it was over 25 years, so... he's going to get paid until 2027. Somebody always tweets out about Bobby Bonilla Day because he gets his deferred payment on a certain date and has since 1992. I mean, that's the point. He did it. Ken Griffey Jr. did it. Of course, nobody talked about it. Ken Griffey Jr. did it. Most recent example is Max Scherzer being able to do that. I believe his Washington Nationals contract takes them to you know, a long time, basically being able to use his deferral system. So essentially people are upset, not because of a rule that's been there forever, it's because the Dodgers used it to great effect to sign the best player in baseball. And also, you know, like I think I quickly mentioned, this was not just something that Ohtani was willing to do just with the Dodgers. Every team was given the same opportunity. That's being reported was that Ohtani wanted to have flexibility. He wanted to make money, but he also knew that teams need flexibility to avoid these luxury taxes in order to contend. So he's willing to do that with Toronto. He's willing to do that with any other team that he met. But the Dodgers just use it to better effect. It's the richest contract in sports, and it's deserved. You're talking about somebody who can play. He can hit like Ruth and pitch like Ruth. I mean, that's how good he is. And so, yeah, I'm sorry if that upsets you guys who aren't Dodger fans, but suck it. Suck it, Michael Hanna, and your sorry Angel team couldn't figure out how to win with two best players in baseball. Your owner sucks, and it's not the Dodgers' fault. So enough about that, I guess. I've now spoken 25 minutes about Ohtani. There obviously will be more noise coming from the Dodgers. Like I said, they're not done. They need pitching. They probably need another bat in the lineup, preferably a permanent left fielder. So there's stuff that they can do. That last bit was, I guess, sponsored by Bullet Bourbon. Bullet Bourbon since 1890. No, I'm just kidding. I thought, since as part of the What's Brewing network, on the Bruin Symposium, we drink, because that's what men do, in order to discuss all things UCLA. So I thought for tonight I would shout out and celebrate with a little of Bullet Bourbon. It's my favorite bourbon. And for this occasion, I throw up a cheers for all the listeners and all the Dodger fans who listen. Shohei Ohtani is going to be a Dodger for the next 10 years. Drink it up, enjoy it, and this Bullet Bourbon is for you guys. The other big story of Saturday, this whole Ohtani news stuff came out on Saturday, was that the Los Angeles Lakers went undefeated in the NBA in-season basketball tournament and won the inaugural NBA Cup. That's right, they went 7-0. They played in the final against the Indiana Pacers. They won that game. They got 41 from Anthony Davis, who was a monster. They got 28 points from Austin Reeves, and they got double-digit points from LeBron James to take the trophy in its inaugural season. It was a neutral court final. It was played in Las Vegas, but it was televised in ESPN, and the Lakers were pretty awesome, and they've been awesome for the last couple of weeks. I believe they're 5-1, or they might be 6-0, since they got Jared Vanderbilt back. Since he's played, their defensive rating is the best in basketball, somewhere around like 114.8, I believe it was. And they've averaged giving up only 99 points to their opponents. So obviously defense has been the hallmark of the Lakers lately. The semifinal in Vegas was against the New Orleans Pelicans, and they destroyed them by over 40 points, I believe it was. Or at least they were leading by over 40 points, and ended up winning by like 33 or something like that. But basically, a defensive stand against them, and then on Saturday, they beat the Pacers, and the Pacers are the number one offensive team in the NBA, and the Lakers held them to their lowest point total of the season at 102. So the Lakers have improved. They've looked better since they've gotten healthy. They're currently 14-9 because the final didn't count. They kept the Pacers to 109, but I think they averaged 123 points 124 points overall offensively. But don't quote me on that. But yeah, the final did not count in the standing. So even though the Lakers have won 15 games this season, they're only 14-9. But that places them firmly in a playoff position. They are currently fifth, but they are just half a game back of the third place Mavericks and Denver Nuggets, who are in third and fourth because they lead their division. And let's see, they are 1.5 games back of Oklahoma City for second in the Western Conference. The Lakers have surely turned things around for themselves. They started off okay, and then they've won 7 of their last 10 games. Again, the final game did not count in the standings. I don't know why every game in the tournament did except the final game. I honestly don't know. It's kind of a silly little tournament, but they're on a 3-game winning streak. Like I said, they've won 5 out of 6 games since Jared Vanderbilt came back. They're got more good news this week. They're signing from Gabe Vincent. They're signing from their one of their big offseason signings is going to be supposedly is supposed to be back for their game against the Knicks at home on December 18th. So right now the Lakers will play tomorrow against the Mavs, a team they've already lost to. And then they play the Spurs back-to-back. Similar to last year, they play them back-to-back over Thanksgiving weekend. And this year, they're playing them back-to-back in San Antonio. So Laker fans will be able to see Wembanyama. I can't remember anybody's name. What's his first name? Victor Wembanyama. Was having a decent rookie season. So the Laker fans will be able to watch those games. As the Lakers face the Spurs back-to-back on the road before they get the Knicks at home, to face, like I said, they'll be getting Gabe Vincent back, who's been hurt with a knee problem. But and he's supposed to be one of their better defenders, help them out with that again. I mean, with between Rui Hachimura coming back from his facial injury to Jared Vanderbilt, who came back after missing the beginning part of the season. The Lakers are starting to look a lot like that playoff team where defense was the foundation, and then you had guys like Austin Reeves, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James, who's still doing great things at his age, working on the offensive side and playing bully ball. I mean, they really bullied the Pacers. Like I said, best offense team in basketball, reduced to 109 points on a neutral site. And then a 40-point shellacking of the Pelicans, beating the Suns before that, beating up on the Rockets before that. I mean, they've strung together some good games here. And they have a chance to really move up in the standings with games against the Spurs, who are only 3-19. They got the Bulls. Most of these games are on the road. That's the only problem, where the Lakers have not been very good this year, but they're not playing very good teams on the road coming up. So it'll be interesting to see how they do going into that Christmas game against the Boston Celtics at home. So Lakers seem to be doing well on the tournament. LeBron won the MVP, of course. He and Anthony Davis were unanimously put on the all-tournament team. And it was also reported today that the team is looking to celebrate the win by hanging a banner hanging a banner to commemorate the win. It looks like it won't be like a full-fledged banner. It will be like the first, I think the way it was described, it'll be like the first of many kind of banners or something, like a unique banner, and then they'll just add the years that they've won it, basically. So it won't be a banner for every year they won. They'll just, every time they win an in-season tournament, they'll put the year on there. So I think it's okay to celebrate it. They celebrate it a little bit afterwards. Obviously, there was a trophy ceremony. The players got medals, kind of like European football, soccer style, where the individual players get medals and then the team gets to collect a trophy. Very similar to what they do in FIBA, the International Basketball Association. So it'll be interesting. It is interesting how some fans, you know, are saying it doesn't matter. But the players were interested. It was very competitive. They were very good games. The Pacers beat the Bucks to get into the final after a very good game. They had beaten the Celtics before that. So it'll be interesting to see going forward how well received this tournament is going forward. I know they might do some tweaks, like they might do the neutral court thing, which I think kind of worked. Obviously, if Vegas gets a franchise, it'll be different then. You know, there's only 30 teams, so once they expand to 32 teams, maybe they can do the seedings and brackets a little different. I know this year they, I think they had to do 5 teams of 6 and deciding the seedings, the tiebreakers made it difficult. So once they go to 32, then they can go to 4 teams, and then it's a little different in terms of how it comes out, more like the World Cup of soccer and other, Champions League, other sort of soccer-related tournament, in-season tournaments that get done. But we'll see. We'll see what the future holds. But for right now, the Lakers are the inaugural champion. There's nothing you can do about that. Nothing will change. They played a great tournament. They went undefeated. They beat all the teams that were in front of them. And they've sort of gelled a little bit better here and have a chance to continue to move up the ladder and see where they are. A little perspective, LeBron said it's still December. You can't gauge what this means for June, or I guess April, May, and June when the NBA playoffs start. But certainly, I think, when healthy, this team is one of the contenders in a wide-open NBA. A little bit more LeBron news. His son, Bronny James, made his debut with the USC Trojan basketball team. He missed the first 10 games due to heart. It's not a defect, I guess, because it was taken care of. But in the off season, while working out, he did go into cardiac arrest for undiagnosed heart condition, congenital heart condition that was never diagnosed. But thankfully, he survived and was taken care of medically, and he was able to come back this year to play for his team as a freshman. He only had 4 points, came off the bench, but it was very celebrated. I think the LA community, the Laker community, was very happy for LeBron. He had said he wanted to be there for his son's first game, and he was. Thankfully, they won the tournament, and he was there the next day to see him play and make his debut with his college team. I believe LeBron has talked about it's the first person in his family to go to college, so he's very proud of his son. And it's very nice that he got to be there for his first game, and that you know, everybody's excited for what they saw. USC lost in overtime. I know the guys that we do the What's Brewing Symposium are probably much happier about that. I think it would have been fun for them to win, but yeah, it was a nice moment for LeBron, his family, and certainly, you know, I can say very happy that Bronny was able to get out there and play college basketball. Which was something he wanted to do, and that he's in the good health that he is in order to do it. So I think that'll be it from me. Listen for the What's Brewing Symposium. I'm sure we're going to talk about the bowl games. UCLA is going to be playing on the, don't quote me, 18th, I want to say. I guess it's the Jimmy Kimmel Presents LA Bowl. Hosted by Rob Gronkowski, Gronk. UCLA will be playing Boise State. My alma mater will be playing the same day in Shreveport, Louisiana, in the Independence Bowl. They'll be playing, oh gosh, who are they going to be playing? Texas Tech. Yeah, 2-6-6 teams playing Texas Tech. Playing against Texas Tech. Yeah, both on the 16th, so this coming Saturday. So I'm sure we'll discuss that. The guys and I on the What's Brewing Symposium about their predictions for the bowl season and predictions for UCLA. And of course, we'll talk more about what's going on in the portal. And I would imagine Jake will have his daughter Megan on when she's home for Christmas break, the winter break. to talk about all things University of California, Berkeley. Go Bears. And like I said, hopefully he and I will at one point get to be able to get together and do a joint podcast and discuss LA sports. But for right now, you might be getting some more solo shows. And as, of course, as we're into the silly season of baseball, talking about what else is going on with Dodger moves. And I guess what will happen with the Angels. So some speculation as to what the Angels will do now, whether they'll trade Mike Trout eventually, either in the offseason or in the regular season, depending on how things are going. Their GM said that they weren't going to trade Mike Trout, but if Mike Trout asked for a trade, I mean, why wouldn't you? What else do you have there? You might as well get the most of that you can get for trading one of your best players in franchise history to at least start rebuilding, because at the moment it's a dumpster fire down there, especially with the news of Ohtani leaving for nothing. That's right, folks. They are not getting anything for Ohtani because they didn't trade for him when they could have. The only thing they'll get is some compensatory pick, not even the regular draft, MLB draft. It'll be some compensatory pick in some other part of the draft, but not in the regular draft. So, and it won't even be in the first round. If the Dodgers have a first round pick, it'll be in the round after the whatever they decide the pick is. So yeah, not good for the Angels, the other team, to watch their best player, the face of their franchise, frankly, ghost them for the last month and then go off and sign as a free agent with the team up the freeway. So Angels fans will still get a chance to watch Ohtani. It's just he'll be wearing blue for the next 10 years. All right, so that's enough for me. Thanks for listening. And as always, we're the West Coast. We're the best coast. We're West Coast Bias.
West Coast Bias.
Dude, Brock, we place a ball on the West Coast.